The Politics Show on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM.
Hello and welcome to Radio Reverb's Politics Show. My name is Geoffrey Bowden. This month we return to religion and the impact it has on politics and society. Locally, the Labour Party has suspended one of its members for alleged anti-Semitism, even though the person in question is the son of a rabbi. The leader of the council felt he needed to call out anti-Semitism during last year's party conference in Brighton. And in the meantime, there's been a rise in Islamophobia. And of course, Christian fundamentalism is having a great influence in the way policies are being formed in the White House at the moment. Locally and nationally, the debate about whether faith schools are forces for good or prolonged sectarianism continues. And the all-pervasive Brexit seems to be playing a part in driving religious intolerance too. The desire to control immigration, particularly from Muslim countries torn apart by strife, was cited as a key issue in the referendum and continues to exercise ours and other European governments. A lot to cover, and with me to explore these issues and other related issues, and importantly, how we build a more tolerant society is, and I'm going to go round and I'm going to let you introduce yourselves. So from my left, everyone else is right, but you can't see that on the radio.
Sure. Hey, Geoffrey. Yeah, thanks for having me. My name is Sidi El Alami. I'm a practicing Muslim, born and bred Brightonian. And I work in mental health services and I do voluntary work. I'm a volunteer and trustee with Sussex Interpreting Services. And
okay, and on your left is
Peter Bennett Speck. I'm chair of the Brighton and Hove Progressive Synagogue and treasurer for the Sussex Jewish Representative Council.
Okay, and bringing up the rear is the all-pervasive, and maybe I'll introduce her, is the interfaith minister and secretary of the Interfaith Contact Group, the Right Reverend, High Priestess of Chester Terrace, the Reverend Anthea Ballam. Say hello to me.
Can I say more? I don't think I can. I think you've said it all.
I'm sort of adding a bit of levity to what is actually quite a serious topic we're trying to cover in an hour. And just to reassure listeners, although we are going to deal with some heavy-duty subjects, we are going to lighten the listening load by having some musical breaks, and we've got some very interesting choices later on in the programme. So let's kick off. Sidi, has there been a rise in Islamophobia? Am I right in saying that, or is that just hearsay? What's your experience been?
Sure, so... Yes, because it's very much the case through personal experience, people around me, people in the community, the statistics are reporting really sharp increase of Islamophobia, especially against visibly wearing hijabi women, so in the streets. Unfortunately, with shocking occurrences that we have women having abuse held at them, denied access to, a Big Mac at McDonald's as recently as a few weeks ago, or having their hijab ripped off. And there's something, I would say, it's part of the dialogue and discussion that,
The short answer is, it's going on. And was I right to highlight that perhaps Brexit has given free rein to some of these people who feel that it's okay to express hate these days? Is that one of the causes, or has it always been there?
I would go as far back as 2001, so 9/11, when I first started being aware of my difference, I would say. So following 9/11, I went to a Catholic school, but I come from a Muslim family, and was never aware of my difference. I was just a person, and I happened to have a faith background. However, at school, early on in secondary school, I'd have, my peers that even my friends would, in the middle of class, start yelling Allahu Akbar and start motioning with blowing up sounds. And this is, you know, these are educated, let's say, for lack of a better word, middle class people. Friends' dad would greet me on the bus saying, oh, it's the mini Osama bin Laden. So this is something that's been on the rise since 9/11.
Insidious. So we're probably exploring how national or international events colour people's attitudes. I mean, Peter, I mean, we've got more, bringing it up more up to date, we've got President Trump deciding that Jerusalem is going to be the capital of Israel, and whether anyone likes it or not, that's what he's going to do. And we see on our screens nightly confrontation between people in the Muslim part of what was old Palestine. You know, we got a wall that's probably going to please President Trump, and probably where he got the idea from. But we see a rise in anti-Semitism as well, with gravestones defaced, synagogues smashed up as well. So,
it's like all these things. It's a complex issue, and as CD says, 9/11 sort of brought out obvious signs of issues around Islam. The same happens with Judaism and the State of Israel, and that gets conflated a lot, which makes it more complicated. So Israel as a government does things that gets international headlines, and people translate that to Judaism. But as we know, anti-Semitism has been around time immemorial. It's the whole Jewish narrative about persecution for however many thousands of years. Post-World War II, I think people at large learned to curb a lot of that feeling, so it wasn't on the surface and so explicit. But I just think there's always been distrust of Jews. So.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, a lot of that myth has been written into history books and being used as justification for isolating Jewish communities. In Israel now, you could say that they've turned the tables and are isolating Muslim communities behind walls and making life very difficult for Muslim communities who lived there for thousands of years alongside Jews. Quite happily, and Christians, and they've actually created a situation which,
I mean, I don't think
is unbelievable.
I think you quite make the same parallel. I don't think Israel's sort of putting Muslims behind enclosed walls, as in, you know, ghettos or whatever. I think it's,
but there's a long wall between
it's
the Gaza.
A long wall,
there's a wall
for their territory.
There's a long wall between the Gaza Strip and Israel, and anyone wanting to pass between it has to spend hours standing in a queue, often, you know, with humiliating checks and balances. So, I mean, that's the situation. Maybe I've simplified a very complex situation, but you've touched on two situations. You know, what happened in the Second World War was a result of politics using otherness and isolating a group of people.
Or several minority groups.
Yes, but you know, whether it's Jews, gypsies, or homosexuals, that's the way that they galvanize people into doing the most despicable things.
Yeah,
and I guess Anthea, you know, from an interfaith group, you know, Christians aren't above all this. We've got hundreds of years.
Well, actually, I think that Christians remain the most put upon religious group in the world still, which is interesting. We imagine that the Jews and the Muslim community are the most marginalised, but I think statistically it's quite possible that the Christian groups are the most marginalised in the world, which is an interesting one, and not one that people know about. And one of the problems is that really it's an embarrassment to highlight it in a Christian country. And so in those countries where you have a certain sort of political or social situation, you become embarrassed to actually let people know about what is going on in other countries, because it doesn't make you look good. So actually, every single corner of the world and over here, we're prejudiced against all sorts of people. The Islamic community, Jews, you know, all sorts of people. It's a human problem. This is what we're talking about. We're talking about a human problem.
I guess
problem.
So. And we bringing up to date and bringing in some other religions, albeit not in our country, but what's happening to Rohingya Muslims.
Well, exactly. It's terrible. Burma, terrible.
In Burma, whatever.
Whatever you call it, yeah.
Myanmar. Thank you, Peter. Sickening.
And vile. Terrible.
And that's in involving Buddhists.
Absolutely. It's so interesting.
Who are meant to be religion. So
absolutely. It's very interesting, this about Buddhists. I mean, Buddhists have, for many years, actually had problems in various countries. They've been accused of all sorts of things. And, of course, there is a Buddhist army, which is, in fact, I think, made available to the United Nations, unless I'm wrong, and the idea of a Buddhist army is a kind of, well, it's a paradox. It's something
but then,
really weird.
You see, we're trying. I mean, obviously, this program is about politics, and we've touched on a number of issues. So 9/11 gave rise to all sorts of Islamophobia. It gave rise to metropolitan police shooting people on underground trains because. You know, someone looked different, and it was had a backpack, and therefore, you know, but that was triggered by maybe someone going out and doing something undesirable. And we've had issues of people driving trucks into people, or people who don't like liberals stabbing MPs. You know, all these things happen, and then
you just have an excuse, Geoffrey. You just have an excuse like Brexit. And significantly, Jo Cox, who's a white English woman, is stabbed and shot by a white English extremist. So you just need excuses. You just put any excuse up. 9/11,
Are these issues intractable? So thinking about Northern Ireland, let's bring it to faith schools. Siddhi, you said you went to a Roman Catholic school.
Sure, for primary school before I went to... another primary school. So for a few years, I went to St Mary Magdalene's in Brighton. An amazing experience for me, and really kind of coloured.
Did they have morning services in the city?
They did, and I sat in them until I realised I could kind of, quote-unquote, bunk off because I was a Muslim. But sitting in them was amazing, so kind of just this, just being around and comfortable and accepting and actually living other communities and other faiths' experiences and traditions, and just... kind of there's something about there's just like a abundance of otherness
but we get people moving houses in order to be in the catchment area of a Church of England school, for instance, and suddenly professing to go to church in order to get their children into a particular school. But that sounds like terribly hypocritical to me, that nothing about religion, but they just want the education. But I mean, where you've got, say, Jewish schools, Peter, is that fermenting otherness going back into society, so that you're separating yourself and you're not coming into contact with Christians, Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus?
I definitely think there's an element of that, and I think you can say that for any non-state-type school, whether it be an independent school that's...
Should they be banned?
I don't know, and probably not. But I think probably schools of that nature have a responsibility and obligation to ensure that there is integration and that it's not creating, you know, a separate...
So, I mean, should there be... should it be called religious education, and that should embrace all faiths, so that people actually understand how other faiths approach things?
Well, also, I think it's probably, I don't have a great deal of knowledge about faith schools per se, but I suspect, and certainly I think where the Jewish ones are concerned, they're probably about more than just the religion per se, because I think with a lot of these different religions, there's a big cultural element. So so I think it's those two things, and probably the appeal for a lot of people to those schools isn't necessarily the strict religious component, but the broader cultural identity that goes with that, and traditions and customs and those kinds of things.
We're going to take a musical break in a second, but I mean, do you think, for instance, I mean, none of you are from Northern Ireland, but there we have a sort of history of separation of Protestants and Catholics, and we know what has that's resulted in. You know, we've got a national government in bed with a group that usually, in the past, did its business by the Kalashnikov. Do you see any hope for situations such as Northern Ireland, where you know, you've got Christians and Christians going at each other's throats, you know, continuing? Anthea, what's your thought?
Well, there's two things I'd like to say. One of them is that when you began this programme, you were talking about the expulsion of somebody from the Labour Party,
yes,
who was considered to be an anti-Semite. It's internecine conflict between different Islamic, Jewish and Christian communities that is much more in my face as an interfaith minister than actually in this city seeing Islamic, Jewish and Christian people not agreeing. When I kind of am with people, good souls like we have here, everybody is in accord. But when you see, I mean, there's a real rift between the Buddhist community in Brighton. There's a massively nasty thing that goes on between one group, which is supported by the Chinese government, and other groups, which are very, very closely affiliated with the Tibetans. And they won't actually even, they said to me, they will not even sit in the same room as each other. We're talking about Buddhists. So, in fact, it is within these cultures that the real unpleasantness exists. And this goes for almost every faith across the board.
Okay, well, on that note of high tension, let's take a musical break so we don't all sort of end up feeling suicidal. And I'm going to go to ladies first. So, Anthea, if you tell listeners what's your choice, and you've done this before, so you've been on the programme before, tell me what, and the listeners, what your choice of music is.
Well, I've chosen Eliane Elias, who's a brilliant jazz musician. She's a Brazilian and American, and she's probably the best living jazz pianist in the world, and she also sings. And this is a fantastic track. It's called Kiss by Nature, and it's just about nature, and it's exquisite and very harmonious. I love it.
Okay, well, let's take a short break to listen to that music, gather our thoughts again, and we'll return to internecine strife between same faiths after the break. Well, that it was rather lovely, and welcome back, everyone. Before the break, we were talking about internecine strife between people of the same faith, outwardly, and you talked about
Buddhists. Yes, real nastiness between Buddhists.
Siddhi, maybe I can, you know, take the cue from there, and to a lot of Western observers, the difference between Sunnis and other branches of Islam seem very esoteric, but it leads to some terrible things happening. I mean, what is at the back of all that? And is it, if you can explain it and sort it out, that'd be great. But I mean, can you explain to listeners why are Sunnis at the throats of Shia branches of Muslim? I mean, to us, sure, they look like, and I'm sure to you, Catholics and Protestants look like Christians.
I mean, without really knowing much about the history, or, you know, admittedly not knowing much about the intricacies, I think what unifies kind of intra-religious strife is politics and desire to...
Well, this is a politics show, so...
Yeah, desire to control and create conformity and normativity, the Shia Sunni divide is goes back to, right to the, near the inception of Islam, you know, 1400 years ago, when a group of Muslims were against the first caliph, Abu Bakr, and wanted Ali. They thought he was a more worthy successor to the Prophet, peace and blessings be upon him. And I think political motivations drove that, you know, and really things haven't really recovered since, and it's just that the gap has widened and widened ever since. It's very difficult because we...
But can you see that for outside observers looking at Muslims cutting each other's throats and being nasty to each other, kind of, in a way, justifies their Islamophobia, because they see them as...
Barbaric
people.
Yeah, outdated.
Forgetting that, you know, people have been kneecapped in Northern Ireland and shot for the...
Sure.
You know, they forget all that sort of stuff. But they look across the seas and they can see something nasty going on. They feel it's being imported into this country.
Yeah, so I think the idea that any religion, there is no religion, if you look at any book of any religion or any faith or any spiritual tradition, the idea that an atom worth of violence is kind of propositioned or promoted is just ridiculous. So I think the unifying factor for religious hatred and violence is humans. You know, humans.
I think the Germans marched into battle with the phrase "Gott mit uns," so, you know, God with us.
Well, religion is the most powerful archetype, so it's very, very, very empowering. It's been too powerful, and
Crusades, of course, back in the Dark Ages, were there to they were meant to be going there to rid the Holy Land of the infidels.
Well, I mean, there's a wealth of literature that argues,
and people don't forget that. I mean, people's minds go back to all that.
There's a lot of academics that would argue strongly that it was financial, economic, politically driven, and that religion was used just to embolden the soldiers, and you know the.
But modern day politicians choose their words unwisely, or probably they choose them deliberately, and they often talk about we're on a crusade against terrorism.
Yes, it's deliberate. Yeah,
and you know, you're linking two historically charged words with an issue which involves religion, and it seems almost deliberate. What are you saying? You think it's deliberate?
What I'm saying is that I'd say that we look at Islam and the image that we have is one of barbarism and really kind of savagery and whatnot, but don't look at how particular groups of people across the history of religion have practiced or said that they have done certain things in the name of religion. We would say, look at quote unquote the walking Quran, which is the Prophet, peace and blessings upon him, how, you know, the compassion and the community and the ambition and the unifying nature of his life, and how it shaped not just the East but the entire world. Mm-hmm. Look at that rather than what people have done and used religion to embolden their very narrow, politically driven ambitions. It's always going to be powerful. It's always going to be used. I think Muslims, I just say this before I pass it on, we're really, really weary, and we have a lot of religious kind of fatigue. There's this kind of moral perfectionism shot onto us that, you know, you're in the spotlight and all these bad people around the world are doing these bad things, so you've got to be bloody brilliant. And we're just so tired of needing to prove ourselves. It's like, just often it's just pick up a book, speak to a Muslim, you know, not in a patronising way, but...
Well, in fact, you have done some... I seem to recall that this weekend, we're recording this in late February, it's going out in March, but the Muslim community has been have been opening up mosques and inviting people in to try and build that,
yes.
Those bridges.
I would say mosques are open all the time. If you're interested at all in the people that live in your communities and have lived in your communities for decades and decades, and actually fought, you know, hundreds of thousands of Muslims fought in the Second World War, or was it the First World War? But that
both, I should think.
Both, yeah.
Yeah. So
along with Hindus.
So if we're
going to
kind of look at this discussing kind of how can we value a community, what have you done for us, you know, we can play that game as well, but we don't want to. I would say our mosques are open, come in regardless of whether it's a visit a mosque weekend. We're just people and we have different traditions and we perhaps wear funny scarves and stuff, but we're just people and bring an open mind and, you know, yeah, it's almost too basic a thing to articulate.
Is it those nasty politicians who are capitalising on the fear of the other? And, I mean, actually, the far be it me to suggest that a party like UKIP has some very odd people attracted to it. I mean, we've seen with the latest leader, I mean, it's Tuesday, so
I
don't know how many leaders they've had, but
sure.
They've, you know... The partner of one leader is already making very unpleasant remarks about the future wife of Prince Harry.
Yeah, mixed race, yeah.
But, you know, they've also had some very unpleasant outpourings about Islam and the Muslims in within.
I'll just say
society.
One really quick thing before I don't want to speak too much. There's a lot of indications... on a collective scale and an individual scale, when you speak to people about Brexit and pro-Brexit individuals, is that actually it's about Englishness and repressed Englishness and a repressed national identity that has just kind of exploded and oozed out in that, hey, we want to take back national sovereignty, this is the line, and we want to be in control of our borders and our people. But there's a palpable, insidious narrative that it's actually...
A suppressed racism?
Yes, we're not happy that our communities have changed. We're not happy about the lack of Englishness and that we can't boldly be English. And that's a really complex but important discussion we need to have, because actually a lot of people can't express their patriotic feelings like other countries in Europe. And that's a colonial discussion and a difficult discussion. But I think there lies in some of the keys to
You've introduced... I mean,
with Brexit,
second half of this programme, we are going to try and look at what interfaith groups are doing to try and overcome. We've talked about the Muslim community opening its doors to mosques. So let's use that as a natural break again. So, Siddi, what's your choice of music? And perhaps say why.
Sure. So among all the outrage and the... Among all the outrage and the discussions and the politically kind of charged atmosphere we live in these days, I really like "Enjoy the Silence" by Depeche Mode. I find it nice. Just the,
Okay, well,
the message.
I think it's a lovely piece of music. I know it well. So let's sit back and listen to that for a few minutes. Well, thank you very much, Siddi, for that choice of music. Welcome back, everyone. Now, we were talking about how mosques are being opened up. Is there something similar with the Jewish faith? Is that happening? Are synagogues open for people to see what goes on
there?
Well,
yes.
We should explain that you're with the Progressive Synagogue.
Yeah, which is liberal.
Liberal. So this now indicates quite an interesting other...
So like with all religions, there are different denominations of Judaism.
Now, but are liberal Jews looked down on by Orthodox Jews.
Yeah, well, yes, to a degree.
So there's a bit of class structure within Judaism as well.
Well, yeah. I think a lot of Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox don't consider liberal Jews legitimate.
Oh dear. And does that cause some strife?
I think that's with all religions, you know.
But then we've got it in a sort of funny microcosm going on in Israel. We've got a right-wing government,
yeah,
which has been propped up by some even further right-wing
exactly,
groups, you know, who have their base in fundamental Judaism.
And we have this across the board with all religions, and you get these fundamental aspects of them, which are very visible and vigilant about, you know, their view of the world, which creates a perception to the masses that somehow speaks to that religion as a whole or whatever, which, as of course we know, that isn't the case. But those are the people that do outrageous things and get the media coverage, and that's what people see and then create perceptions. So, and again, you know, it's the human condition. It's how we are, and we just have that in.
I wonder if I could ask you all, because we're talking from the odd perspective of Brighton and Hove Arians and Port Slavers, and we are known to be a very liberal society. We have a high gay LGBT population. And the LGBT community look at the news and they see gay people being cast off buildings in Muslim countries, they see all sorts of people going into marriages to keep a semblance of respectability to suit their families and society. And also, you know, we take it back to Brexit, you know, the vast majority of people in this city voted to remain, which does say something about the attitudes. Anthea, you've got some thoughts on this, I'm sure.
Well, yes. I mean, I think that it's such an interesting discussion because really the point the city made, and I think that Peter did as well, is that the real problems that exist within religion are nothing to do with the religions at all. They're to do with the politicians that are actually exploiting religion and race as a way of actually manipulating people, and that's a real scare and that's a real tragedy, and I find that really, really sad. I wanted actually to mention this amazing exercise that I saw going on at Downs Junior School, where groups of children were asked to identify with different faiths, and they came from different faiths. And in some of the groups, if it was, you know, imagine that yourself as the Jewish group, there might be somebody who's Jewish, or there might have been no people. But the beauty of it was that each group examined the diet, examined the history, examined the lifestyle, and identified with that group, and then publicly explained themselves and did a little sort of PowerPoint, so that every single child within that year or within that group was able to acquaint themselves with that faith and identify with it, which I thought was a brilliantly interfaith and enlightened exercise that really allowed children of any different faith or group or social thing to identify with a different racial or cultural or faith group and really connect with it. And it was a marvellous exercise to see, and I was invited in to look at it, and it just delighted me because all of these children just enjoyed the experience, said, taste this, do that, read the other. They loved it. They loved it. And this leads me to believe, and sorry, shut me up if I'm talking too much, but leads me to believe that really,
I've tried for years.
I know, and it doesn't work, does it? The beauty of faith is something that people have a right to, like the colour they wear, the things that they love, and we should accept that. And it's just politicians that don't allow us to do that. But actually, faith and belief and what traditional religion you decide on is a beautiful thing that we should all honour.
But there are, I mean, that exercise at Downs sounded wonderful. And those children, I'm sure, will have learned a lot. Mm. When they go home to their parents who might have different attitudes, do you think their parents are influenced by what goes on in the school?
I don't know, but I do know that the children really participated in something like this. And I think an exercise like that stays with you all your life. I know that many of the things that I learnt at school stayed with me all my life, but the positive things are really the things that are most beautiful. And it is positive stuff that stays with you more than negative stuff. And my parents were wonderfully bigoted in all sorts of ways, and yet I became an interfaith minister. So, you know, it may take 100 years to get out of it, but you can get out of it in the end.
I think there's something else that goes on here,
Peter,
which is that, as Anthea has just spoken, that worked tremendously well. You asked about when the kids go home. I think on an individual basis, people are much less closed-minded and much less, have much less strong views about things. And with these bigger subjects, you have something of the mob mentality that changes how people behave from as individuals in those particular situations. So I think we can look at all kinds of things and find people being extremely reasonable. But somehow, when it goes to the population at large, that alters.
And can I say something? It is your synagogue that opened itself to an interfaith service, which began with an imam doing the call to prayer in your synagogue. And a lot of people cried when they experienced that, because it was such a powerful peace gesture that really blew us all away.
Yeah, I mean, we've focused a lot on some of the issues that we can see for ourselves, either in the news or, you know, in our streets. I'd love to just turn this around a bit to sort of issues or initiatives which are trying to turn this massive tanker around, so that we can start living together and respect other people for whatever, you know, their beliefs, and get a better understanding. Now, I'm going to give you a free hit, Anthea Ballum, because the other month at Brighton Museum, a rather interesting initiative was kicked off, which was led by the Interfaith Contact Group. Do you want to tell listeners again what it is? Because this initiative is going on for a while. So over to you, Ms. Ballum.
Thank you very much. Well, it goes on until September the 1st. It is significant that...
Tell us what it is first.
It's called the Angels in Our City Project. And if you go on to the Interfaith Contact Group .com, you can see there's a competition there.
Right.
It started actually with one of our Islamic members who said, do people really realise that angels play such an important part in the Islamic tradition? And this became a subject of discussion. And so we decided to open out the whole subject so that people really understood that, in fact, of all things, angels are something that have been hanging around for the last 3,000 plus years, even ancient Egyptians. So we decided we wanted an angel for Brighton and Hove, and we've invited people to participate in a competition, which is through the Interfaith Contact Group, and we want them to either draw or paint or write an angel for Brighton and Hove. And they send this in to our website, and on September the 1st we close the competition, and then we will give prizes to people of all ages who have created an angel for Brighton and Hove.
Okay, well, that sounds like a rather joyous little exercise, and it may be a chink of light at the end of a very, sometimes what seems like a very dark tunnel. And I think probably a very good cue to take our final music break before we start concluding this conversation with, I hope you can tell us a bit more about some other initiatives that could lead to greater understanding and more tolerance in our society. So, Peter, the fickle finger of fate is now pointing at you. Now, you did virtually, I always joke at this juncture during the programme where I say, you can have any music you like as long as it's not the Ring Cycle. And you virtually chose the Ring Cycle. So I know that you wanted Brahms' Violin Concerto, which is one of my favourites too, but it's 46 minutes long. Yes, yeah. The exact Perlman version I have is. So tell us what you have chosen, which we can slot into this short programme.
So another piece of music that is one of my favourites, because I was asked to just pick my favourite piece of music, which of course is hard because I don't know that I have one specific, or anyone has one specific favourite. But another very, very beautiful piece of music for me is Time to Say Goodbye by Andrea Bocelli and Sarah Brightman, or sung by those two.
Okay, well, a bit of show business into this program about religion and politics. Why not? So let's listen to that. Thank you for that choice. Welcome back. The strains of Sarah Brightman and Andrea Bocelli drift into the background. I promised listeners that we would try and talk about other initiatives going on in the city to bring faiths together, create better understanding, and make a better society. So, a kickoff. So we've already heard about mosque being opened. Anthea's Angels.
The IFCG's Angel Project, which is lovely.
Well, yes, Anthea talked about the IFG, the Interfaith Contact Group's Angel Project, goes on till September. And then some other initiatives from the IFG. You have an interfaith service?
We do, and in fact the interfaith service will be linked to the Angel Project, so it goes on really almost beyond September, because after September we'll judge who is the angel of Brighton Hove, what design or words, and in September we get the great and the good to judge, and then in November it's Interfaith Week, and we always have a service. And I just reminded Peter that one of the most beautiful services we ever had was in his in the beautiful synagogue he's the chair of. And
rabbi has the most wonderful voice, I believe.
Absolutely beautiful voice. Yes, she's gifted with a great voice, and she's.
Give me a name check, please.
Oh, Rabbi Eli Sarah. She's a real personality within the interfaith community of Brighton Hove. She's a real supporter of the interfaith. In fact, in March, I don't know when you're bringing that up, but she will be talking about angels with the imam and also one of the Christian leaders of the city in Friends Meeting House on Mother's Day. So we're having an interesting Mother's Day chat about angels then.
Okay, and then also there's other groups other than the Interfaith Contact Group and ones that you work closely with. And I was thinking about an event that I went to, and you shoved a microphone in my hand and asked me to do some, you know, work, sing for my supper. Thank God I didn't have to sing for my supper, because I saw you were in a choir doing that. But Dialogue Society. Now, the Dialogue Society, do you want to... Who knows something about the Dialogue Society? I think Siddhi, you do.
Siddhi, you must
yes.
know.
Yes, so the Dialogue Society is actually a national initiative run by the Turkish Muslim community, and it's about bringing communities together, not just faith-based communities, but different interest groups, whatever you call them these days, within the, you know, voluntary groups, community organisations... community initiatives, and just come. Often they'll have food together. There'll be a breakfast morning. I've been participating in a Brexit panel in the last few months where we've had
the full English Brexit.
Pretty much. I mean, plurality of Brexit. We've had the Vice Chancellor of Sussex University, and we've had a few MPs. We've had the Bishop of Lewis as well. Yeah, it's been really cool to hear different ideas about Brexit and how we can start to heal our communities beyond the impact of Brexit. So yeah, the Dialogue Society, there's a website, there's Facebook. The local branch director is a gentleman called Mahmoud Gunaydin.
He's lovely.
He is very lovely.
He's one of the sweetest guys.
And he's involved with the IFCG, and he's a...
Very much so.
Yeah, he actually came up with the idea of the angel.
He did indeed.
He did. And so, I mean, it seems to me there is there is light, and maybe the someone is turning the dimmer switch up, and the light is getting brighter. And
certainly,
it's,
yeah.
And it's how do we influence politicians who seem to like to latch onto otherness in order to... gain votes, but I mean, it sounds as venal as that. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. I think politicians are an absolute scourge sometimes, not always. Some of them are very good. We're gifted with a very good one locally.
Some of us have been politicians.
Some of them are good.
Well, as was so aptly put just the other week on Question Time, one of the questions from the audience to the panel was, why is it that a politician never answers the question that they've been asked? And I just think that sums up everything about the majority of politicians and why we're all so frustrated with them, is they never do that, so you just don't know where you are with them.
Okay, I fear we have come to the end of our allotted time. It's whizzed by. I apologise to listeners who may have heard noises off. The studio is in London Road's Open Market, where loud music plays on occasions, and we've had that to accompany our conversations. So my thanks go to my guests today. It's clear that from behind the scenes there is much going on to address intolerance and build understanding, although it can often feel as if, for one baby step forward, inappropriate interventions on the global level can cause giant leaps backwards into darkness. Thank you for listening. If you want to continue the debate, visit the programme page or our Facebook page. But thank you again for listening.